the 9th chapter from the 1st verse. This is a long chapter, as you can see, there being 57 verses. And it's rather a strange chapter because it continues the story of Gideon, the judge. Gideon has died at the end of chapter 8. And as well as having 70 sons by his real wife, he unfortunately also had another son by a lady whom he kept in the north, in Shechem. And the story of chapter 9 is the story of this boy, because he was one of the great gangsters of the Old Testament. His name was Abimelech. Now Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, that's Gideon's other name, went to Shechem, way in the north, to his mother's kinsmen, and remember that the mother was Gideon's lady friend, and said to them and to the whole clan of his mother's family, "Say in the ears of all the citizens of Shechem, which is better for you, that all the true 70 of the sons of Jerubbaal should rule over you," that's the 70 sons of Gideon, "or that one man should rule over you? Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh." And his mother's kinsmen, that's the relatives of the lady in the north, spoke all these words on his behalf in the ears of all the men of Shechem. And their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, this upstart. For they said, "After all, he is our brother." And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-berith, the lord of the covenant, a heathen shrine, with which Abimelech, the gangster, hired worthless and reckless fellows who followed him. And he went to his father's house at Ophrah in the south, and slew his brothers, the sons of Jerubbaal, Gideon, 70 men upon one stone. But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And so all the citizens of Shechem in the north came together, and all Beth Millo, and they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar at Shechem. When it was told to Jotham, he went and stood on the top of Mount Gerizim and cried aloud and said to them, "Listen to me, you men of Shechem, that God may listen to you." And he starts here his famous parable, the parable of Jotham. The trees once went forth to anoint a king over them. And they said to the olive tree, "Reign over us." But the olive tree said to them, "Shall I leave my fatness, by which gods and men are honored, and go to sway over the trees?" And the tree said to the fig tree, "Come you and reign over us." But the fig tree said to them, "Shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go to sway over the trees?" And the trees said to the vine, "Come you and reign over us." But the vine said to them, "Shall I leave my wine, which cheers gods and men, and go to sway over the trees?" So none of the trees wants to become king. Then all the trees said to the bramble bush, "Come you and reign over us." And the bramble said to the trees with something of a smile, "If in good faith you are anointing me king over you, then come and take refuge in my shadow." But of course, a bramble bush gives no shade. It's too straggly and sparse. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble. And remember that the brambles would be the cause of bush fires. If not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. And of course, he's saying that this new upstart of a king, Abimelech, is just a bramble bush. Now, therefore, if you acted in good faith and honor when you made Abimelech your king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal, Gideon, and his house, and have done to him all his deeds deserve, for my father fought for you and risked his life, and rescued you from the hand of Midian, and you have risen up against my father's house this day, and have slain his sons, 70 men, on one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his maidservant, king over the citizens of Shechem, because he is your kinsman, if you then have acted in good faith and honor with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice in this, Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if you have not acted in good faith, let fire come out from this Abimelech and devour the citizens of Shechem and Beth Millo, and let fire come out from the citizens of Shechem and from Beth Millo and devour this Abimelech." And Jotham ran away and fled, and went to Beer, and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech, his stepbrother. Abimelech ruled over Israel for 3 years. But God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and his relatives, the men of Shechem. And the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, so that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come and their blood be laid upon Abimelech their brother, who slew them, and upon the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to slay his brothers. And the men of Shechem put men in ambush against Abimelech on the mountain tops, and they robbed all who passed by them along that way, and it was told Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his kinsmen. And the men of Shechem put confidence in Gaal. And they went out into the field and gathered the grapes from their vineyards and trod them and held festival and went into the house of their god and ate and drank and reviled Abimelech. And Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech? And who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Did not the son of Jerubbaal and Zebul his officer serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem? Why then should we serve him? Would that this people were under my hand, then I would remove this Abimelech, and I would say to Abimelech, 'Increase your army and come out.'" When Zebul, the ruler of the city, heard the words of Gaal, son of Ebed, his anger was kindled.
And he sent messengers to Abimelech at Arumah, saying, Behold, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his kinsmen have come to Shechem, and they are stirring up the city against you. Now therefore go by night, you and the men that are with you, and lie in wait in the fields. Then in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, rise early and rush upon the city. And when he and the men that are with him come out against you, you may do to them as occasion offers. And so Abimelech and all the men that were with him rose up by night and laid wait against Shechem in four companies. And Gaal, son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance of the gate of the city. And Abimelech and the men that were with him rose from the ambush. And when Gaal saw the men, he said to Zebul, Look, men are coming down from the mountaintops. And Zebul said to him, You see the shadows of the mountains, as if they were men. Gaal spoke again and said, Look, men are coming down from the center of the land, and one company is coming from the direction of the diviner's oak. Then Zebul said to him, Where is your mouth now, you who said, Who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these the men whom you despised? Go out now and fight with them. And Gaal went out at the head of the men of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him, and he fled before him, and many fell wounded up to the entrance of the gate. And so Abimelech, the upstart, dwelt at Arumah. And Zebul drove out Gaal and his kinsmen, so that they should not live on at Shechem. On the following day, the man went out into the fields, and Abimelech was told. So he took his men and divided them into three companies and laid wait in the fields. And he looked and saw the men coming out of the city, and he rose against them and slew them. Abimelech and the company that was with him rushed forward and stood at the entrance of the gate of the city, while the two companies rushed upon all who were in the fields and slew them. And Abimelech fought against the city all that day. He took the city and killed the people that were in it, and he razed the city and sowed it with salt. When all the people of the tower of Shechem heard of it, they entered the stronghold of the house of El-Berith. And Abimelech was told that all the people of the tower of Shechem were gathered together. And so Abimelech the upstart went up to Mount Zalmon, he and all the men that were with him. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down a bundle of brushwood and took it up and laid it on his shoulder. And he said to the men that were with him, What you have seen me do, make haste to do as I have done. And so every one of the people cut down his bundle, and following Abimelech, put it against the stronghold, and they set the stronghold on fire over them, so that all the people of the tower of Shechem also died, about 1,000 men and women. A gangster, you see. Then Abimelech went to Thebes, and encamped against Thebes, and took it. But there was a strong tower within the city, and all the people of the city fled to it, all the men and women, shut themselves in, and they went to the roof of the tower. And Abimelech came to the tower and fought against it, and drew near to the door of the tower to burn it with fire. And a certain woman threw an upper millstone upon Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. Then he called hastily to the young man, his armor-bearer, and said to him, Draw your sword and kill me, lest men say of me, A woman killed him. And so his young man thrust him through, and he died. And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed every man to his home. And thus God rewarded the crime of Abimelech, which he committed against his father in killing his 70 brothers. And God also made all the wickedness of the men of Shechem fall back upon their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal, whose other name is Gideon. Amen. May God bless the reading of his own word. To his name be the honor and praise. Now we see the 9th chapter of the book of Judges is one of the mystery chapters in the Bible. And I'm bound to say here that one is almost tempted to skip this chapter and go on to chapter 9, to chapter 10, where we find more familiar material, the start of the story of the judge Jephthah. And so the question is asked, why has God allowed this strange chapter to be in the Bible? Does this chapter, with its story of bloodshed and murder, does this chapter have anything to say of lasting worth to Christians today? You'll remember that Gideon is dead. 70 of his sons are alive there in the south, living with Gideon's true wife. Up in the north, there is the lady that he kept for many years, his concubine in Shechem. And she is living with her son, who is called Abimelech. Almost inevitably, there is a bloodbath. The 70 sons of Gideon are slain, and the upstart Abimelech proclaims himself king. He reigns for 3 years. And then in turn, there is a coup d'etat, and he is slain. And so it is that at the end of the chapter, Jotham, the last son of Gideon, becomes the next judge. Now I ask you, does God have anything to say to us in this awful story of violence and lust for power? Well, it seems that God wants us to notice this chapter very specially. Because if you recall, on this Sunday last year, our friend Miklos Zarka was visiting us from Hungary. And if your memory serves you in good stead, you will recall that this was the chapter that Miklos Zarka preached on. He preached on the parable of Jotham, the story about the trees, and which one was going to be king of the wood. And so it seems as if God wants us to think very carefully about this chapter. How fortuitous that out of all the chapters in the Bible, on this Communion Sunday, it should have fallen to us now to think of this story today. Now, of course, two things rise to the surface and confront you. The first of these is the tragedy of Abimelech. And I want to think about this boy, Abimelech. There is something very sinister in the boy's name, because Abimelech means my father is a king. And if you recall rightly, you'll remember that in the last chapter, Israel offered Gideon the kingship, and he refused it. But it may well be that although he refused the crown, secretly in his heart, He longed to be a king. If Gideon gave the boy his name, then there is something sinister in the name. I mean, why call your son, "My father is the king"? And it may well be that although Gideon on the outside refused to lord it over his brothers, secretly in his heart there was a cherished ambition to be a lord amongst God's people. And the question arises, and it's a very contemporary question, in a violent society and a violent world that ceaselessly throws up criminals and hoodlums, the question is, what makes a man a gangster? What made this boy a criminal? What made Hitler the man he was? What is it that makes the Mussolinis, and the Stalins, and the Al Capones of society? If you set aside hereditary things, the things that come down to us in our blood and in our bone from our parents, if you rule out these hereditary things, what is it that makes a man go wrong? Now that's a very powerful question, because you see, this gangster's father was a man of God. He was a man of faith. Hebrews says, by faith, Gideon, in spite of his failings, which were obvious, in spite of his terrible mistakes, which were obvious, this boy's father was a man of faith. He trusted God. By faith, Gideon wrought righteousness, subdued kingdoms, and obtained promises from God. And at his very best, when he was in the prime of his spiritual manhood, Gideon was a God-fearing man, and he brought salvation to the church for 40 years. Now, how is it that that man's son grew up to be a gangster? This is a very contemporary question, because you see, many people who are interested in the well-being of society are now more interested in prevention rather than cure. Not so much how can you cure criminals, but how can you prevent criminals happening? What went wrong with this boy? Now, I'd like to suggest that the father denied this boy two things, and these two things, the denial of them, almost secured that the boy would be a gangster. Christian parents, if you want to know what to give your children, it's very simple. In two words, you give them law, and you give them love, and you never give them the one without giving them the other. If you give your children nothing but law, they'll have a rotten childhood, and they will not grow up to bless you, because the regime in your home will be a hard, legalistic, merciless regime if you give them all law and no love. If you give them all love and no law, then they'll grow up to think that you're just soft-hearted sentimentalists. But if you give them law in a context of Christian love, they will grow up to be healthy and strong. Now you see, the thing that Gideon didn't give his boy was law. That's why he grew up to be lawless.
The law of God said, one man, one woman, they too shall be one flesh. That's what the law of God said. But we read in chapter 8 that Gideon had, quote, many wives. The law of God said, thou shalt not commit adultery. But we read in chapter 8 that he kept his lady friend in Shechem. What a catastrophe! The law of God said, thou shalt have no gods but me. But Gideon had many gods. The god of ambition, the god of power. The law of God said, thou shalt not make unto thyself any graven images. And yet the most catastrophic thing that Gideon did in his life was to take all the gold and the jewelry from God's people and build himself an idol. And it became a snare to him and to God's people all their days. The law of God said that the man who rules God's people must be a simple man, ruling in the fear of God. But Gideon multiplied riches. And Abimelech watched his father. You know that children watch their parents. They form their impressions of God from their parents. Their first contact with the law of God is through their parents. And mark my words, God help us all. Children have a nose for hypocrisy. When they see God's law saying one thing, and they see their fathers and mothers doing it other things, please believe me when I tell you that children have a nose for hypocrisy. They can see through fathers and mothers who aren't true. And Abimelech watched his father. He heard the law of God. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not make graven images. All of that. And he watched his father. And he saw that his father was a hypocrite. Christian parents, if you want your children to grow up healthy and sound, teach them to fear justice. That's what's wrong with our society. People do not fear justice. Criminals go smiling into the law courts, and they come out of the law courts smiling, because nobody is afraid of justice anymore. Teach your children to fear God. Teach your children to fear the law of God and to honor the law of God and to respect the law of God. They'll never be healthy children without it. Let me tell you a story of a family that went very far wrong. And I remember speaking to them. And here is a trivial instance. It's very trivial. During the war, you remember how cream cakes were terribly scarce, and you only got fancy biscuits on a Sunday. Now, the father of this house laid down a rule that before the family could eat the fancy biscuits, they first had to eat the bread. And so it was plain fare first, fancy fare second. But the children in this house noticed that although that was the law, the father had a sweet tooth, and he ate fancy cakes all the time. Now, that's a trivial instance. But the children grew up to resent their father, and they had a grudge against their father, because they thought, you see, that this world was like this. There was
one law for the rich and another law for the poor. There was one law for parents and another law for children. There was one law for clever people and another law for stupid people. And they grew up to believe that the law of God was made of elastic, that you could stretch it as far as you liked, you see. That the law of God was an adaptable law, and you could pull it just to please yourself. Now, it's a trivial instance. But because that father never inculcated into his children a fear of justice and a right sense of law, the children grew up to be wrong, and in fact, every child in that family went off the rails. There were other causes as well, but that was a major cause. Give your children law if you want them to grow up healthy. And the second thing that Gideon denied his son was love. Oceans of love. Children cannot be healthy and balanced unless you surround them with oceans of love. And there is a feeling in this story that Gideon neglected his boy. The fancy lady and the son, they lived away in the north, and they would see their father only occasionally. And the boy grew up deprived and emotionally starved. In fact, this story reminds me of the next judge who also grew up like this. Listen to these words. Jephthah was a mighty warrior, but he was the son of a harlot. Gilead was the father of Jephthah, and Gilead's wife, the real wife, also bore sons. Listen to this. When his wife's sons grew up, they thrust Jephthah out and said to him, "You shall not inherit in our father's house, for you are the son of another woman." And then Jephthah fled from his brothers, and worthless fellows collected round Jephthah. You see, he was an unhappy man. Worthless fellows collected round Jephthah and went raiding with him. You see, the lovelessness of his childhood made him into a gangster. Worthless fellows went raiding with him. And if you want your children to grow up healthy and balanced and mature, you must give them personal care. I could keep you here for many hours telling you the story of broken-hearted Christian boys and girls who come to me confessing the appalling lovelessness of their homes. Christian parents who neglect their children and don't give them personal care, personal attention, and personal love. And I'm sure that it's because the father didn't give the boy law and didn't give the boy love that he grew up to be this kind of man. The second thing that really strikes us in this chapter is the story of Jotham and his parable from verse 8 onward. The trees once went forth to anoint a king over them. And there are two things I want to say about this strange parable of the trees. The first is this. Well, the two things are this. Nature is fallen, and nature preaches. When Adam sinned, he dragged the whole universe down with him. Stones, forests, planets, they all became poisoned by his sin. The whole universe was contaminated because The chief of that creation had sinned against God. That's why, particularly in the Old Testament, there isn't time to read the passages, but you may have time to read at leisure Hosea 4 and Jeremiah 4. That's why in the Old Testament particularly, you get these appalling pictures of a universe that is destroyed because of the sin of man. The birds have fled, the seas have gone, the forests have died, the land is a desert because of the sin of man. Nature has fallen. But the wonderful thing is this, secondly, that although nature has fallen, it teaches us. When the Bible wants to teach us things, it goes into the natural creation. Do you know what Jonah's whale teaches us? The inescapability of God. However far you run, you'll never get away from God. Jonah thought he could escape God, but the whale got him. God always gets his man. In heaven or in hell, God always gets his man. And that's the message of the great fish in the book of Jonah. God had got his man. Have you lost the way to God? Isaiah says, the ox knows its owner, and the ass its master's crib, but my people do not know. Do you know your owner? Do you know who owns you? The ox could teach you a lesson. The ox knows its owner. Do you know your owner? The ass knows the way home. Do you know the way home? Is your life filled with care? Jesus says, go to nature. Consider the lilies of the field. Look at the flowers. For Solomon, in all his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. Do you know the way home to God? Jeremiah says, go to nature. Nature is fallen, but nature preaches. Do you know the way home to God? Jeremiah said, the stork in heavens knows her times. Birds migrating, they know the way home. And the turtle dove and the swallow and the crane, they keep the time of their coming. But my people do not know. Do you know the way home to God? Look at the birds migrating. They know the way home. Is your life filled with anxiety? Jesus says, look at nature. Look at the sparrow lying in the gutter, covered with dust and diesel oil. You are of more value than many sparrows. Nature teaches us. And what does nature say to us in Jotham's parable? Well, I think it's a great parable to think of as we come to Christ's supper. You see, the trees want to choose a king. And they say to the olive, well, you'll be the king. The olive says, no, thank you. I'm too busy making olive oil. So they say to the fig tree, now you'll be king. Fig says, no, thank you. I have no desire to lord it over the trees. I'm far too busy producing food for my fellows. So they say to the vine, you will be king. The vine says, sorry, I have no ambitions to be a king, or indeed a tree of any importance. I'm far too busy producing wine to make glad the heart of man. You see the message of nature in this parable? You see, these trees sacrifice their lives for the good of others. The olive and the fig and the vine give up their life in order that others may live. And the message of nature here is this, that we are called to serve. Jesus Christ came amongst us as a servant. He is the serving Christ. He is like the bramble, of no importance. He takes the lowest place. He does not want to be king or lord it over his fellows. And the challenge of nature here is just this, that in the wood of God, in God's forest, it is of more importance to produce fruit than it is to be somebody of importance. I am always very amused by people struggling for importance inside the Christian church. What a lot of jockeying there is for position and power. Everybody wants to be important and recognized. The olive, the fig, and the vine say, sorry, we don't want to be important. We just want to go on producing the goods. It can all be summed up succinctly in an old adage. Jotham's parable is this: the way up is the way down. May God give us grace.